Hello friends, it's us. Welcome back to yet another episode of What Page Are You On? It's me, Bethany Rutter, and I'm here with my good friend and business partner.
Now I've been criticised for sounding like I'm leaving a voicemail when I throw my name in. So I'll just say it's me, Alice Slater.
We are here for another episode of this great podcast. It is a book club episode. This week, month, whatever, we're talking about Wide Sargasso Sea by Jean Rhys. It's been a while since we've recorded, isn't it?
We've had a little summer holiday, like the children do.
Yeah, because even though there have been episodes that you listening at home have heard, we recorded at least one of them quite a long time ago.
So Jean.
It's been a long old time since we've sat down together.
It's good to be back in the saddle.
Shared a tinny. Well, we have our own tinnies, but mutually enjoyed a tinny while we record. She says, taking a sip from her tinny.
Refreshing. So it's baking hot.
It's so hot.
Which,
it's appropriate.
I was imagining today. I was like, what if it snows today because we're recording?
Yeah, like we made it snow every time in the winter. But no. On the occasion of talking about Wide Sargasso Sea, we are broadcasting live from the Caribbean, aka Alice's flat. Cool. So let's get going on Wide Sargasso Sea. Tell me your backstory to the reading this book.
I do have a backstory. So, my copy, I've had for almost 10 years. When I did an MA at UEA, my good friend Eugene Noon recommended it to me.
And I went, is this Eugene who I met at Primavera?
You met Eugene, and he described meeting you as like meeting Beyonce.
Oh my God.
I know, he's so much. But he thought I'd really love this book, and he recommended it. So I went straight and bought a copy. And I started reading it. I probably got 10 pages in and put it down because I didn't really enjoy it. So I was excited as like a 32-year-old to like approach this book again with fresh eyes and see if I fared any better with it. What's your backstory? Have you read it before?
No, never read it before, partly because I have never read Jane Eyre either. So okay. I have no experience with this world or this story. It was a book I was aware that people really liked, but I had never read it. It had never crossed my path in any of the things that I read. So I, if I had stayed on my first degree that I attempted to do, which was American Studies.
I did not know this about you.
Yes, I'm a university dropout. I did American Studies at the University of Sussex for a total of 8 weeks before dropping out because I was so miserable. I think if I'd stayed, we did a lot of like things to do with the Caribbean. It was a lot of that as well. I think if I'd stayed, I would have ended up reading it for one of my Caribbean courses. But I didn't. And here I am with you today. So, you know, I've never read it. Didn't really know anything about it. Haven't read Jane Eyre. Don't know anything. You know.
Have you read Jane Eyre now, though?
I started listening to the audiobook as read by Tandy Newton.
But did not finish it.
Because it's quite long.
It is quite long. When I saw you were doing that on the old audio, I thought, fuck me, all right.
Yeah.
Someone's got a lot of free time.
Yeah, it turns out I love podcasts more than I love listening to Jane Eyre on audiobook. So I've squandered a lot of ear hole time that I could have been spending on Jane Eyre.
See, I read Jane Eyre when I was about 16 on holiday in Greece. And I don't know why I thought that was the time to read it.
That's terrible.
I fucking loved it. I have this memory of like lying flat on my belly under a fan, like reading one of the big dramatic scenes. I can't remember which one now, but reading just like the spicy bit and being like really pleased with myself
for enjoying it, because it's,
but that's the thing, I feel like reading a book like that at that age, you feel so smug because you suddenly discover that like this kind of literature is accessible.
Yeah,
and you always assume it's like a big old fusty classic and it looks like it's going to be too much effort, it looks like it'll be hard work, and then actually, funnily enough, classics are classics because they're very readable and have like great stories and characters and plots. So I loved it.
I am theoretically interested in continuing listening to this book, even though I didn't listen to it in time for this episode, which is fine because we're not talking about Jane Eyre.
We're not. Fuck Jane Eyre.
Yeah, she can naff off. So yeah, my backstory to this is absolutely nothing.
We talked a long time about nothing.
Yes.
But I love it. Okay, important question. Did you dig it?
I did dig it. I know some of us didn't dig it.
Maybe some of us did not dig it. I didn't dig it.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm into it. I like the fact that you didn't dig it.
I feel like I have to be honest. Not just with you, but with our listeners.
Yeah. So what... Tell me about the experience of reading it.
Okay, so a lot of people had messaged when we announced that we were going to cover this book. A lot of people got in touch and said that they loved it and they were really excited that we were going to read it and we were going to discuss it. So I felt like, on top of also my trusted recommendation from my friend Eugene, I felt like there was a little bit of, like, pressure to love it. But also, I did kind of expect to love it. I was looking to, like, you know? But I just didn't connect with it. I found very disoriented. I didn't realise, like, I was confused between the mother and daughter having such similar names, Antoinette and Annette. The fact that Mr. Rochester isn't named also just confused the fuck out of me. Like, I kept not really knowing who was speaking. When the narrative was jumping between...
Yeah, in the middle third, where it goes between those two people.
Antoinette and the nameless man, who's obviously Mr. Rochester. That I found so confusing. I kept getting a couple of paragraphs into a section and then realising, oh, hold on, wait, hang on, I'm back with the husband. Oh, no, I'm back with the wife. I just was so distracted by trying to work out where I was. I didn't feel like I was kind of...
fully present in the story.
Yeah. Yeah. And even though I think, like, on a line level, I thought the writing was absolutely great. There was loads of stuff that I really loved. It's sort of like, there was just too much of a disconnect that I don't really feel like I could even describe most of the book to you now.
Yeah. I think it does have things about it that make it disorienting and confusing.
Which it's supposed to be, right? Yeah. Like, it is intentional.
Yeah, I didn't find it necessarily an easy, relaxing read, but I did really enjoy it, and I'm really glad I have read it. I liked the world that it was set in. I liked reading something that was set in Jamaica. I liked that. I thought that was really interesting. I don't read a lot of books that are set in Jamaica, especially at such a, like, weird, pivotal time in the history of the West Indies. I thought that was all really interesting about... it being set so close to the Emancipation of Slavery Act, and living in what was, you know, a hot place, but, like, politically and socially very, like, prone to flare up in very literal ways. I found it a really interesting book. I thought I was into it. I really loved the place, and I loved, I think I just sometimes like reading about things that are things I don't know about.
I think that's the thing, is that I really enjoyed the setting. I loved the backdrop. I loved the, not so much loved, but was intrigued and fascinated by the kind of the cultural tension. The actual plot of the book, however, like the actual bones of it, I just couldn't keep track of.
It is confusing, and I did sometimes have to like... look on Wikipedia for the plot to make sure that I was focusing on important things and not missing things.
That actually makes me feel a lot better then, because I think maybe if I had been a little bit more accepting of the fact that I was struggling to follow it, then maybe I could have been more proactive and looking elsewhere to find some more context just so I could
enjoy it more. I'm very pro, like, I do this whenever I go and see, like, a Shakespeare play. It's like I read the plot in advance, so, because I just want to enjoy it. Like, I know, especially when I was reading this and I was like, I want to check that I understand who everyone is, I understand what's going on. Yeah, I just feel like sometimes I don't notice really important things in books because I don't know where to look. Like, I don't know what I'm meant to be focusing on. And I feel like this is one where you could really easily not know. And because I didn't necessarily... I knew vaguely that it must conclude, or it must all lead towards her going to England and living as a mad woman in an attic. Like, I feel like just that knowledge helped me a little bit, but I still needed quite a lot of, you know, I just needed to check, like, who was her half-brother? Like, who is this character? Like, is this person good or are they bad? Like, I think I did need a lot of that, which isn't for me, that's not a normal reading experience.
See, I think, even talking about, like, the inevitable ending of Bertha, like, I think almost knowing that it was about Jane Eyre or based on Jane Eyre, but not knowing how Jane Eyre was relevant, for me, I think was also massively distracting. Because, you know, the first third, it's Antoinette's childhood.
Yeah.
And I'm just constantly like, how does this fucking relate to Jane Eyre? Like, who is relevant? None of these characters exist in the world of Jane Eyre that I could
wait,
remember.
So you didn't know that?
No, I knew. Oh, okay. I knew, but I think that massively distracted me.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know until, literally until the word Bertha comes up. I had no idea that Bertha was the
Oh, so that's what I mean. So you didn't know that the main character in this was going to become the wife in Jane Eyre. Okay, cool. I think because I did know that in advance.
Yeah.
I don't know how I knew it. Or maybe I just knew
stuff.
I picked it up. I knew that's what White Tiger SoC was about. And that obviously makes an enormous difference to how you read the book and how you perceive events in the book. And yeah, I think that makes a really big difference. So I now fully am on board with you being annoyed by this book, the reading experience of this book.
I wouldn't say annoyed. I felt passive.
Yeah.
I think that was also a problem for me. I feel like when someone says that it takes them a long time to read a book, quite often it's because they're not actually reading it.
Yeah.
And that's... I remember picking this up about 10 days ago because I just finished reading a book that I cannot recommend enough called... It's behind me somewhere. How to Love a Jamaican by Alexia Arthur. So I'd actually just coincidentally
read a short story
collection, a lot of the stories of which are set in Jamaica, but it's contemporary. So I picked it up, even though I kind of felt like, oh, I've still got plenty of time, it's a really short book, but I thought, no, I'll get it done, and then I can, you know, carry on with my fun time reading on our summer holiday. And I literally finished it this morning.
It had been a drag.
It took me 10 days to read this, like, tiny novella. I think because I kept realising, like, I'm not really taking anything in.
Yeah, and it is one of those books where if you aren't 100% concentrating, your eyes will skim over the page.
Mm-hmm.
And you won't take anything in.
And you have to pay attention because it's about mental health and it's about this woman being, like, she's, like, gaslighted and, like, the world around her is being manipulated constantly. The narrative is intentionally confusing, so you kind of have to pay attention because you have to sort of be able to anchor the action to something. But I failed to do that.
I understand. I feel like there are a lot of bits in it that I find really memorable. I know now, I feel like I probably knew as I was reading it that she is disclosed in Jane Eyre as a result of a fire, right?
Yeah.
So I think when there is the initial fire in White Tiger SoC, just that... I don't know if you remember this from your unenjoyed reading of it, but this image of, like, a parrot, which is, its wings are on fire, coming out of, like, a window in an upstairs room of their house, I found that really, like, arresting. And there was lots of moments like that where I was like, this is another world. Like, this isn't my world. This isn't, like, Jane Eyre world. This is, like, a whole weirdly magical place where these horrible images can happen. I really like that. Do you remember the parrot on fire?
I have no memory of the parrot on fire.
Yeah. This wasn't the one for you, was it?
It just wasn't. And I feel, you know, so if I didn't have to finish it for the pod, I would have stopped reading it again.
Yeah.
And then maybe that would have been the end of the road for me in White Tiger SoC. Maybe eventually during a purge of books, I would have got rid of it. But on the other hand, maybe it wasn't the right time for me. And having read it and kind of know the bones of the plot... Maybe a second reading later on. Not now. I'm not committed to loving it for the sake of loving it. But maybe in 10 years, 20 years' time, the timing will be right. Maybe I would have just reread Jane Eyre or read a great essay about it or whatever. Maybe in the future I will approach it again with more... with a map and a compass to, like, work my way through it. And I will get more out of it.
Yeah. I thought it was cool to... Like, Jane Eyre is a very kind of quintessentially British... novel, and I thought it was cool to read this book that was like, here is a whole history and a whole world and a whole host of characters that also are this story that you could, like, Charlotte Bronte could never write this book. It literally couldn't happen. She would have no idea what any of these places looked like, what it felt like, what the plants smelled like.
Because Jean Rhys grew up
in Dominica. Which is super cool, and like, yeah, I feel like this angle, this way of looking at these stories that we think of as, like, fundamentally British, I think sheds an interesting light on them and about, like, British complicity in the slave trade and why were these English men in the Caribbean anyway?
Yeah, and, like, that Mr. Rochester doesn't just own this fucking mansion because he's a hardworking British citizen. Yeah. Like, there is this entire fucking horrific backstory as to how so many English people had so much wealth.
Exactly, and why he was even visiting there. Something that I found slightly confusing, because I'm not 100% intimate with this knowledge, is I kind of thought that she wasn't white, but she is white. Or she's is she white. Just whiter than the
no.
white people? Okay,
no,
so she's
so
white.
She's white. The family were themselves slave owners.
Yeah.
And when, following the emancipation of the slaves, they obviously kind of lost all their wealth. So they were living in poverty. So the people in their community, most of which were black people, who had themselves been slaves or the children of slaves, kind of referred to them as like white N-words.
Yeah.
They are explicitly white, but she's Creole.
Yeah, so I think that's what confused me, is I am a fool and do not know exactly what it means to be Creole. Creole can mean anything from individuals born in New Orleans with French and Spanish ancestry to those who descended from African, Caribbean, French, Spanish heritage. That's not very helpful. That's like a whole load of things. And I think there's a difference between Louisiana Creole people and not.
So that's also what... So I thought that my understanding of Creole, just only from being, like, a Nolophile, was that the Creole people were the French or Spanish that had moved there. But were, so they were white European living in Louisiana. I didn't know that it was possible to be Creole outside of that specific bracket. But that could be... I mean, they're called Antoinette. She's called Antoinette, like,
yeah.
She's a French, so...
It's some kind of French descent.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Or not so much descent, but I guess for the time period it would have been immigrant.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I'm glad we didn't clear that up at all.
good luck editing that.
Yeah, so I think that partially confused me, because I was like... I thought there was some racial dynamic with her that I wasn't... Yeah, that isn't actually there. But still, it's interesting, because she is other. Like, she isn't...
She's othered within her community, yeah.
And also within his community. Like, yeah. She isn't European enough to be a white British wife, but she isn't black. She's just grown up in the same environment as these people that her family used to own as slaves. I liked that. I thought that was interesting. And it contributed to her sense of, like, a lack of... anchoring in the world and a lack of identity.
Have you read The Yellow Wallpaper?
No, and I mean to.
Oh, I'm so ignorant.
I know, I'm literally the dumbest bitch who ever lived, because it comes up constantly. Everything I read that I think is really interesting, someone's like, yeah, it reminded me of The Yellow Wallpaper, and I'm like, I own it, it's on my shelf. My friend Anne, who lives in Orange County, bought it for my birthday last year. I haven't read it yet. I'm just wasting my life.
Okay, so that is a really quick read, because it's literally a short story. It's like 40 pages
long. Yeah, it's the tiniest book I've ever owned in my life.
But I'm probably saying it reminded me of The Yellow Wallpaper, because everything that's like oldie-timey about mental illness, like, reminds me of The Yellow Wallpaper. But I only read it last year.
Okay, cool, so I'm not like 10 years behind.
No, I mean, yeah, but we're also behind reading this. Like,
yeah, it's true.
You can never have... No one has read everything.
It's true. The last thing that reminded me of that someone proposed, like, being about The Yellow Wallpaper, was when I went to see Friend of the Pod, Emily Barrington.
Oh, Friend of the Pod.
Friend of the Pod, brilliant actress Emily Barrington in Machinal? Who knows? Who knows how it's pronounced? It was a play at the Almeida Theatre. And she said, I said, it's like The Bell Jar, which, as you know, we've read on the pod recently. And she
loved
was
it.
Like, yeah,
yeah,
it's like The Yellow Wallpaper too. And I had to be like...
Yes. Yeah.
I ain't read it, but it comes up so much that I feel like I'm wasting my life by not reading it. Especially, it will take me no time at all to read it.
Yeah, you'll whiz through it. And maybe it'll contextualise all of these books that we've read recently about mental health.
I feel like I know enough about... You know, it's not like it's a thing that I'm going to be like, whoa, this radically changes how I think about the female experience in the world.
But truthfully, I don't think it will. And I do think that sometimes our enthusiasm for... contemporary classics and classics can be because we've spent a lot of time with them if we've studied them. And like a lot of people who recommended White Sargasso Sea to me had studied it at university studying English literature, which I didn't do. I studied creative writing. And same with The Yellow Wallpaper. A lot of people had studied it. So, yeah. Like, I think if you sit with something for a long time, you really can, like, get into the marrow of it and have an appreciation for it that you just don't necessarily get on first reading.
Yeah, it's true.
Because I also had a lot of people message me saying, really excited to hear you talk about this because I didn't get along well with it and I just feel dumb. Like,
yeah.
Did I miss something? Like, am I not smart enough for this book? And, yeah, it's like, I don't know, it's like a little bugbear for me, really, that sometimes you do need context to appreciate something in the way that you're expected to. And for most readers,
you're never going
to
get that.
I have time to get that context. I'm not going to read essays about every single book that I read. I'm only going to do that for books that I feel like I have unfinished biz with.
Or you're wildly passionate about.
Yeah, like every essay written by a woman that's published in like a mainstream media outlet about Rebecca, I'm going to be there and I'm going to read it.
You're going to lap that up. Oh, speaking of which, before we move on, I just want to plug a thing that I personally, Bethany Rutter, I'm doing on Sunday night, so Sunday the 12th of August. If you have any interest in Rebecca, I am on a panel called Dead Wives and Poor Darlings, or Poor Darlings and Dead Wives, can't remember which way around it is, which is at Somerset House. It's about 7 o'clock. It's ahead of the summer screening of Hitchcock's film of Rebecca, which I've never seen. Have you seen it?
I have. I've seen it. Of course you have. Many times. I love it so much.
So yeah, I'm chatting to a few cool gals before the screening at Somerset House. So if you're interested in that, just find it on the internet.
Just Google it. Google it.
Yeah, everything's on Google. But yeah, I just thought, as you brought Rebecca...
Natural segue. That was unintentional.
For you, maybe. For me, I planted the seeds long ago.
Hashtag not spawn.
Not spawn. Just a thing that I'm doing. But yeah, I agree. Like, it's rare that you ever get the opportunity to... Or you ever have the impulse to read more deeply, especially something that you didn't like. You're like, well, that's over. I've read that now and I don't have to think about it anymore.
I think it's also about curiosity, isn't it? And, like, I did read more about this because we have to talk about it. And I just felt... It's not acceptable to do a podcast on your podcast with your pal and be like, I knew nothing about it and I still don't. The end. Like, I had to put in some work. And I'm glad I did because I certainly now have... I don't feel like I've wasted my time. It's a seminal book. I have, like, a better idea of what I'm doing talking about it. But I guess if you also read this book and didn't connect with it, it's not just you, pal. Like...
I think this is a really interesting example of, like, a very widely read book that, on a kind of reading level, I thought it was going to be more chill than that. I think for a book that so many people have read, that is, like, actually a pretty mainstream 20th century book.
Oh, fuck yeah. It's a perennial classic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting. Like, it isn't Rebecca. Like, it isn't a straight-up narrative. Yeah. I don't know, I think it is quite unusual, especially for something that was written in, what was it, like 1939?
It was, 30s.
I think that is a very futuristic book. I think this is a very modern book in lots of ways.
Because of the writing style?
Because the writing style, also, like, the kind of post-colonial literature, that it is quite kind of feminist in understanding how a construction of madness in women happens, yeah, I think it's a really interesting book. It's just not what I was expecting at all. And it is to read much more, like, difficult and requires a level of kind of prior knowledge and also post-reading that most books like that don't.
Yeah, agreed.
Tell me about Jane Eyre. Does it bang? You think it bangs?
Well, I read it when I was 16 and I'm now 32.
Half your lifetime ago.
Half my lifetime. Exactly half my lifetime. Wow. They're a thing, eh?
Yeah. Look at that.
But I really enjoyed it. But again, I think that... So I feel like Jane Eyre is a book that had cropped up a lot in my reading. Like, it wasn't a random choice for me to take it with me on this holiday. Two books that I absolutely loved as a kid were the Jacqueline Wilson Girls series. And in book two, Girls... It's the weight loss one.
Yeah.
Girls Under Pressure. She reads Jane Eyre, and there's a lot of scenes in which she talks about the representation of fatness and weight in Jane Eyre.
Interesting.
Yeah, so, like, the narrator, a girl called Ellie, Ellie is, like, very fixated on the fact that Jane Eyre, everyone calls her plain but thin. Like, her thinness is...
a redeeming characteristic, yeah, like, as opposed to her lack of prettiness.
Exactly. Yeah. Whereas Bertha, when she comes out of the attic, she's described as fat. She's broad and, like, full-bodied. And, like, this is something that the narrator of this Jacqueline Wilson book is very fixated on. Also, even, like, the food in the book as well. Like, she describes being so hungry because she hasn't eaten for a few days. She describes, like, being capable of, like, wolfing down Jane's, bowl of burnt porridge. So I had these, like, very distinct images in my head anyway from that. And then also another literary classic, the point horror book The Body by...
not R.L. Stein.
Not R.L. Stein. I think it's Carol Ellis.
Cool.
Anyway, in this book, the plot of the book is a young teenager gets this job reading to a girl who's been in an accident and is in a wheelchair and is, like, recovering. And at the moment, she can't speak and she's in shock. And she's reading Jane Eyre, and this character, the girl, like, will, like, twitch her hand at certain key points. And the whole narrative is, like, built around this girl trying to explain what happened to her through the book Jane Eyre.
That's such a wild...
for a fucking point horror book, it's pretty wild.
This is really interesting that two very kind of unliterary books for teenagers... like, they're very, like, yeah, commercial fiction for teenagers are so heavily constructed around Jane Eyre. Yeah. That's really weird. I'm into it.
So that's why I read it. And... I think, you know, I really like it. Yeah, it's very gothic, and it is a long book, but it's a very easy read.
Yeah. I liked what I heard. Tandy Newton does a very good job.
Well, I think I would be interested to reread it and see how I feel about it now as an adult. But to be honest, I'm sure it still bangs. Yeah. Like, you know.
If you thought it banged when you were 16, it's probably not going to not bang now.
Yeah, but I thought that Bukowski banged when I was 16. I was a fucking idiot.
But that was for, like, probably internalised misogyny reasons, which probably doesn't apply to, like, Jane Eyre.
Probably not.
Fingers crossed. I feel like I haven't read a lot of classics. I download them when I get an Audible credit, and then I never listen to them.
What classics have you read?
Okay, so my favourite long, old book is Great Expectations.
Did not like that book.
I think it bangs. I think it's juicy. I think it's fun. I just love it. And that's why I liked The Goldfinch more than a lot of people, because I loved the way that it was kind of like Great Expectations.
I think my beef with Great Expectations, again, everyone, it's so many people like cited it as one of their favourite classics. And then, I don't know, it was just like the whole book hinged on a coincidence that I felt cheated. I felt cheated. I wanted it to be clever, and it wasn't clever. It was just...
it's true. It's just coincidence. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I don't disagree with you. I think it's it's a funner book than I feel like a lot of Charles Dickens. I think it's because I read Great Expectations in the same year that we had just read fucking A Tale of Two Cities, which hated. It was for A-level, AS-level. Yeah. I'd hated A Tale of Two Cities so much, and I have such an apathy towards anything about the French Revolution. I find it so boring. Any media literature to do with it, I'm just like, no, fuck off, don't care. Which is a challenge when you do a degree in French after you drop out of your American studies
degree. Yeah, I bet I came up
semi-regularly. But yeah, I think it was just such a relief to read something that was like fun and kind of light, that I really enjoyed Great Expectations. But I really don't feel like I've read a lot of that. I don't know why.
For Halloween we should do like a gothic.
I would love that, because I've read some of Dracula. I've read quite a lot of Dracula. And I liked what I read. I liked the bit where he's like crawling up the outside of the castle. That was
Dracula starts so strong and then it goes on for so long.
Yeah, maybe that's why I never finished it.
IMO.
Yeah.
Too long.
I never read Frankenstein neither.
I've never read Frankenstein. Okay, done.
Let's do it. I was listening on audiobook to Richard Armitage reading Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and I was enjoying it lot more than ever thought I would. I don't know what... I think they just put it on their homepage, on the Audible homepage, and I was like, oh, yeah. And I downloaded it. I was super into it. Why do I not read these books? Why will I only listen to them on audiobook? What's that about? I think it's because I see them as being a chore, and I feel like if someone's spoon-feeding it to me, I will enjoy it more.
I feel like it can be quite hard to trust recommendations for classics because I don't necessarily think that people give context to why they like them. Like, I can tell you exactly why all the classics I've read and loved are all gothic as fuck, and that's what...
You like.
That's my bag, you know, that's what I'm into. Whereas, I don't know, like, every time, whenever I've mentioned classics on Twitter, I'll get lots of recommendations, but you don't need to be recommended classics, because we've all heard of them. I need to know why they're good.
Yeah, I agree. Because, like, when I first got into Audible, this is not spawned by Audible at all. I know they do spawn, so I feel like we need to say that. Yeah. I did ask, like, what is your favourite, like, long classic that I might not have read because I would have perceived it as being boring. A lot of people recommended Middlemarch, which I have downloaded, and that is 31 hours long.
I mean, that's almost a full working week.
For me, it's way more than a full... Just kidding. I downloaded North and South because people like that.
No, you're going wrong. Go short and spooky.
Yeah, like I think. Me. Yeah, exactly. That is the two adjectives I would most commonly use to describe you. I don't know. And also, maybe it's okay. Like, if I try enough of these and I don't like them, I think it's okay to be like, I'd rather not. Like, my reading time is short and precious.
Fuck it. Who cares?
Who does care? No one. Like, no one cool cares whether I have read Middlemarch.
I feel like we've ended up, like dipping right back into classics, whereas, obviously, White Sagacity is a contemporary classic.
Yeah.
And that is a whole other section of books that I think is the same applies, right? Like...
Yeah, I think the takeaway for whether it's a classic, a contemporary classic, something that's very of the moment, is, like... It's not important to like it. You don't have to read it. You don't have to engage with it. It's not important. It's literally not important at all.
Agreed.
Yeah. I'm not, like, annoyed that people like this shit. Like, I'm not going to be like, I'm so much smarter than you because I don't read these things. It's more just like, I want to enjoy what I read and I feel like I don't enjoy this. So it's cool. Like, I'm out, but, like, I think everyone should be reading what they enjoy.
But I might check back in later.
Yeah, exactly, when I'm in a different mood or I've learnt something that I didn't know before.
You know what this conversation reminds me of, though? Talking about, like, classics and particularly in the context of reading them for, like, A-level or at school or at university. I was having this conversation the other day with my mum about PE, and I feel like as a little fat girl at school, I really suffered in PE because my... right to consent over what I wanted to do and what I didn't want to do was never respected.
So true.
Right? So, like, you know, no, I don't want to fucking jump off the gym horse. I'm scared of doing that.
I don't want to climb one of those ropes that's hanging out down from the ceiling.
Like, no, that frightens me and I really don't want to do it. No, I don't want to wear a swimming costume in front of the entire school for the swimming gala. Like, you know, and what I ended up saying to my mom is, like, we have to ask, like, what is PE for?
Yeah.
What's the point of it? Are we doing it because we want to encourage young people to exercise regularly when they may not be doing exercise outside of school? Or are we doing it because teenagers tend to be less, like, active and it's a good way to make sure that... Like, it's a good way to get them doing, like, group activities and, like, working on, like, team shit. Or is it just because it's good to know the rules of various sports and, like, it's fun, it's a way of, like, getting, you know, using up some energy? Like, what is it for? What's the purpose of it? And I feel like it's sort of applicable to reading classics. Like, what is the purpose of reading at school? What's the point? What are we doing it for? We're doing it to teach comprehension, because it's a really valuable skill to be able to read a piece of information and understand its purpose and be able to repeat the information that you've learned. We also do it because reading literature is a great way of, like, understanding more about the world around you, understanding more about history, empathy, etc. So why are we still so focused on classics?
It's true. And also, like, wouldn't... I feel like in a 21st century world, you would, as a young person, learn more, like, about the world and the history of the world and the way that gender and race works from White Sagacity than you would from Jane Eyre.
Exactly, but 100%.
You would always be reading Jane Eyre. Make you think.
Make you think, indeed. Especially, I think especially, but also, like, for kids in the UK today, they're only reading books by British authors.
And they're only generally reading books by white authors, whether they're British or not. Like, I went to an extremely non-white school, and yet that was not reflected in the books we even read at A-level.
But now it's literally the curriculum.
Yeah.
Like, now it's not even about just the general biases in what teachers are more likely to pick. Like, the curriculum is literally British writers. It's bullshit.
Because I read, one of the books I read for my A-level was Cold Mountain by Charles Fraser.
Oh, yeah.
Who is not English, but is white. Okay, so returning to specifically White Tiger SOC and books of its ilk, what other books are spin-offs of another book, especially a classic?
Oh, great question.
Yeah. Because that is what this book is. Essentially, it is Jane Eyre fan fiction.
Yeah.
What books exist like that?
Ooh. Susan Hill wrote Mrs. De Winter. I know Rebecca's not a classic, but that
is... Yes, it is.
Only
to us, it is.
It's a contemporary classic.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Only because of the... For me, if it's pre-1900, it's a classic.
Interesting.
If it's post-1900, it's a contemporary classic.
Who knew? You did.
But then that's, like, the arbitrary line that Waterstones makes. Like, I don't know. But that's, like, the only one I can think of that's, like... And no one reads that, so who gives a fuck anyway?
Susan Hill, big old Tory.
Yeah, no. God, love her, but fuck her.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So this is a thing that we can ask our darling readers for. Like, we're on the spot here, but you're sitting at home listening to us. Can you think of other books like this, which are kind of... fan fiction spin-offs, reimaginings of
set
classics.
In the same world of.
Yeah, with the same characters. I'm not talking like 50 Shades of Grey as Twilight fan fiction.
Still counts. Oh, Rules of Attraction and The Secret History, which we've discussed on the pod before.
True, interminglings of worlds by different people.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to know more of this.
Yeah, I wish I'd thought about... If I'd known in advance, I would have done some research and had some, like, good answers, but...
We can leave that up to our friends at home.
Yeah.
I want them to play along.
Hit us up.
Yeah, you know where we are.
All right, bye.
No.
Sorry.
What are you reading at the moment?
So today, in one sitting, I read Sabrina.
Long-listed for the old Booker Prize.
Booker long-lister. It bangs.
Okay, cool.
It absolutely bangs. It took my breath away. It was not what I was expecting at all. Because casually flicking through it, there's a man in military uniform. There's a lot of, like, military-based stuff. And I thought it was, like, more political. And it absolutely isn't. It's about male violence and loneliness and toxic masculinity in America. It is amazing. I absolutely loved it.
Cool. Okay, cool. That's good. That's the kind of recommendation I feel like our friends at home will enjoy.
Yes. What are you reading right now?
What am I reading right now? Right now, I'm reading the same thing that I've been reading for the last several days, which is The Red Riding Quartet by David Peace. I'm obsessed. I've read three in a week. I'm on to my third, as a quartet would suggest. There's four books in this series. I am now on to the third. I started the first one about 4 days ago. I read the first one in a day, the second one in a day. I've had a bit less time over the last couple of days. The third one's taking me a bit longer. Like, it is literally some of the best books I've ever read. Like, I'm obsessed.
Fuck me.
Yeah, right. I knew I'd like them, and I watched the TV adaptation, which was done in 2009, a few years ago. I don't remember it super well. I don't remember it, like, changing my life. But I just, you can't... It was awfully bold of them to think they could film these books, because they are so not... I wouldn't bother. It's amazing. Like, they're all set in Yorkshire in 1974, 1977, 1980, and 1983. Those are the titles of the books. And it's told from the point of view of different people in different books. Each book is by a different person, or one is two people. About different crimes, some true and some not. So the first one is entirely fictional. The second and third are about the Yorkshire Ripper.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah. It's just so good. Like, the writing, I've never read anything like this. It's so amazing. It really contextualizes the way that we perceive, like, narratorial and authorial voice when you're reading, like, racism and sexism and things like that. I think it does really interesting stuff with that. It's genuinely amazing. And if you like your books very dark, as opposed to, like, normal thriller dark, then I cannot recommend these enough. I'm absolutely obsessed.
Would you think I'd like them?
I think you would really... I would assume you would really like them, for some reason you might not. I don't know. Do you know what? I think they are very similar to White Tiger SOC in the way they're written, in that there's stuff in them that you're like, I don't fully understand what's happening. I'm just going to ride it out and see how it goes. Like,
I don't mind feeling. I don't mind that. I think that the problem with this book is I don't think that I realised as I was reading it that was what was happening. Mm. It was intentional. I think I was putting too much of the onus on me.
To understand stuff that no one would understand.
Or sometimes you do, when, you know, reading something that is intentionally confusing, you kind of have to accept that it's confusing.
Yeah. And that, I think that is, with these books, that is very much what's happening. So the plot that you're meant to understand is delivered to you incredibly clearly. You really understand what you're meant to understand. There's things in the second book that I was like, I really don't know what's going on. I don't know what this is. I don't know when this happened. I don't know who it's happening to. And then by the third book, it's like laid out explicitly what that was. And it's just so, I don't know how this came from the mind of a human. Like, it's so amazing. And the thing, I think my number one compliment to this book, which I will tweet when I have finished reading it, just in case it goes wildly off in the fourth book, is that I have literally never read a book where the dialogue was every single line. I believe that these are words that would be spoken by these humans.
Mm.
You know how, like, even the best books sometimes have dialogue where you're like, that doesn't really ring true? This, not only you read it and you understand these are people from Yorkshire talking without it being written in some, like, hokey, on-the-page dialect way, you're like, yeah, I understand who these people are, what they're saying. Every single line of dialogue rings absolutely true. It's so good. I hope you would like it. It's published by Serpent's Tale, who I think have really good taste.
Okay, maybe I'll read the first one.
Try the first one. It's just, yeah, it has stuff in it. At least the first one or two has stuff in it that I have never read in anything before. Like, it's incredibly dark, pretty nasty. But, yeah, I think while, as you know, we should be rightfully squeamish of things that go too ghoulish in violence against women, I think when they are used to highlight kind of institutional misogyny and stigma against sex workers and true things that happen to women in the history of the world, like, I think I'm much more interested in that than, I don't know.
I'm intrigued.
Yeah.
Especially that, like, I think if I was hearing this recommendation from anyone else, I would have an eyebrow cocked.
Yeah.
Because it's a man writing.
Yeah. And so would I, like, I think there is a lot to cock an eyebrow about, but I feel like the way it's executed is just so fascinating. Like, I'm loving it. I'm absolutely loving it. And yeah, like, maybe I am more into books that a lot of women would be like, ooh, no.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe my taste leads more bro-y than a lot of, you know, our lady contemporaries, but I think you'd love it. That's my recommendation.
I'm into it. I'm gonna give it a go.
Yeah, we can discuss further outside of the pod, but yeah, that's what I'm reading at the moment. After like 10 minutes of exposition, I can confirm I'm reading 1980 by David Peace. I've had a nice time.
I've had a lovely time.
It's pretty warm, isn't it? It's like being really hot in the West Indies.
I am honestly tempted to say, let's just go back to the beer garden that we were just in.
Not that I have to edit this episode for tomorrow or anything.
Oh, yeah. I always forget about that. Karen isn't working. After I clock out, she's still got more to do.
You go to the beer garden, I go down the mines. The content mines. Join us tomorrow night. What time's it going to be, Alice, later?
It will be at 8 p.m, the later time of.
Yeah. We moved it a little bit later because that's what people want.
If you disagree with that, though, please let us know, because
we just want to give you what we want. We don't care. We book the night off anyway.
Yeah, same shit.
Okay, so tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, at WhatPagePod on Twitter.
Hashtag Sargasso. No, what? Hashtag
WPAYO. Sargasso.
Bang in.
We will see you there.
All right, love you. Bye.
Peace out. Bye.